This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Lumberjack Werebear. Written by T.S. Joyce. Performed by Mackenzie Hart.
Chapter 1. The brakes on Brooke Bell's Volvo screeched as she pulled to a stop and glared at the sign above her front window. Ashland Mobile Park, it read. Mobile Park. Her mentor, Meredith, had described the rustic oasis she was going to be spending the next 3 weeks in as if it was a row of quaint Victorian cottages nestled near Saratoga, Wyoming, not a trailer park. She shook her phone, as if the GPS was to blame, and rechecked the address Meredith had scribbled onto a note card. She should have known something was amiss when she had to travel an hour outside of town to end up here. The sun was sinking behind scenic mountains that stood guard over the 10 tiny mobile homes in front of her. No way did she want to brave those switchbacks again in the dark. She'd barely survived the winding roads to get here in broad daylight. With a muttered curse, she eased forward and parked in front of the first trailer on the left that had an office sign over the front door. Her brakes squeaked again, but she wasn't embarrassed. The concrete pad she parked on was cracked like a spider web and was sprouting an interestingly shaped weed garden. No one was going to judge her here. Slowly, cautiously, she stepped from the safety of her car and made her way up the creaking porch stairs to the office. After opening the screen door, she knocked soundly on the inner one, which seemed to be made of plywood held together with mold. Wiping her knuckles on her jeans, she waited. And waited. Where was everyone? She narrowed her eyes at the shadows that stretched across the dirt road and bisected two rows of trailers. She blew air out of her cheeks with impatience. A few old pickup trucks sat in front of some of the houses, but from the way the grass was hugging the tires, they'd likely been there for a while. Well, shitsickles. No one was here. Now what was she supposed to do?
Are you lost? A deep voice sounded from beside the porch.
Brooke started and jumped back. Balls! She clasped her chest like it would keep her skittering heart inside. You scared me! A tall, stocky man leaned against the corner of the office with his arms crossed, as if he'd been there the entire time. The frown on his face made it hard to tell if he was handsome or not.
I asked if you were lost.
Hopefully. She cleared her throat and straightened her spine. Could you help me figure out if I've made a wrong turn somewhere? I'm looking for 1010 Ashford Drive. I'm supposed to be renting a cabin for a few weeks. The man's eyebrows shot up, exposing his dark eyes beneath. His gaze drifted to a dilapidated trailer, and a chuckle rumbled from his chest.
Miss, if you're looking for a vacation home of some sort, you rented the wrong one.
Brooke pursed her lips and absorbed the appearance of the small trailer smack dab in the middle of the park. From here, it clearly read 1010. If she ignored that the last zero was dangling and hanging on by one last rusty nail, she was going to kill Meredith.
Name's Bruiser, the man said with a grin.
Bruiser?
Uh-huh.
Your parents thought about it? And the name they came up with for their child was Bruiser?
Aren't you a judgy little thing? Since you're so curious about my upbringing, no. They named me Horace, which got me taunted as a kid until I grew big enough to beat the shit out of my bullies. They were the ones who gave me the name Bruiser.
I didn't mean to. She inhaled deeply and started again. I'm sorry. It's been a long day, and this place, she said, holding her hands up helplessly, wasn't what I expected it to be.
I'd imagine not. Wait here, and I'll get someone who can help you.
The corner of his lip twitched as he turned and strode to the trailer next door.
Connor, he called, banging on the metal side of the house. Need your help with something. What the fuck, Bruiser?
A man called from inside. He ducked under the too short door, buckling his belt with a look of pure fury on his face.
Today is one of my days off. All I ask is for one day where I don't have to wear any gosh danged.
His eyes drifted to her, and he froze.
Pants, he finished.
He was all ruffled blonde hair and bewildered green eyes.
Brooke snorted. Really, she tried to hide the laugh, but she hadn't known there was such a thing as a pants-off day. It's not funny, he muttered, gripping the railing of his porch. What do you want?
A friend of mine rented a house for me? Bruiser, over here, tells me I have the right address and that you can help me.
Connor's eyes went wide. Brooke Bell? Her heart sank to the toes of her sneakers.
That would be me.
Holy shit, you showed up. And early. You weren't supposed to be here until next week, hypothetically. If you showed up, he frowned. Which I never thought you would actually do because, look around. This ain't ideal for a vacation. That's what I said, and what are you talking about? Bruiser asked, crossing his arms over his chest again until his biceps flexed. No women up here. You know the rules. We aren't into renting to strangers, either. Especially not highfalutin, city-slickin' judgy Judgertons like this one. No offense, he said, as he flicked his attention to her, then away.
None taken.
She didn't want to hunker down in hillbilly town any more than Bruiser wanted her here. Connor took his time, looking her up and down. Suddenly, feeling vulnerable, she swallowed hard and clasped her hands in front of her thighs.
Meredith Center, was all Connor said before he stepped lightly down his porch stairs and sauntered over to the office where she stood. She could have sworn he sniffed her hair as he passed to pull the front door open. Creepy.
Bruiser chuckled. His chuckling then turned to laughter as he bent at the waist and locked his hands on his knees, chortling until he wheezed. The ass.
Huh,
he said, standing and wiping moisture from the corners of his eyes. Dagan is gonna lose it when he finds out about her. Bruiser pointed to Connor and grinned. He's gonna bleed you.
Shut up,
Connor muttered, then disappeared inside. Talk of bleeding people jacked up Brooke's discomfort another notch. She took a seat in front of the desk in a cracked faux leather chair that Connor had pointed to. He sank into a matching seat behind the desk.
You got a boyfriend back home.
What?
A boyfriend, a lover, bedmate, whatever. You got a man waiting for you?
That's none of your business. Connor was trouble. If she hadn't suspected his unwanted intentions before, this question would have sealed it. She definitely wasn't looking for any male attention. I should go. She should have left the second she saw the sign for the mobile park. Now she'd lost precious minutes of daylight.
Pipe down. I'm not asking for me.
Well, he said with a wink.
Not only for me.
Bruiser's not my type, Brooke gritted out.
Fair enough, he murmured as he rifled through a desk drawer.
Here. He tossed her a key, which she wasn't ready for, and dropped on the floor.
Nice reflexes.
To hide her irritation from the idiot behind the desk, she leaned over to retrieve the key, giving the carpet a dirty look.
Thanks, but no thanks. I really should be going. Meredith made some sort of mistake. I don't belong here.
Damn straight you don't. But unless you want to navigate back roads in the dark, I'd suggest you make yourself cozy in trailer 1010. Okay, the mention of those roads in the dark did scare her enough to clutch the key.
Does it lock?
A.K.A., could she escape the hair sniffer who was looking at her boobs right now?
Course it does. That one's got a fancy double lock and everything.
She shouldn't stay. Her danger radar was blaring off the hook. But her options were limited. Stay here until the crack of dawn, when she could barrel out of this dump, or get lost in the dark, in the woods, without food or water.
Thank you, she said through clenched teeth.
Connor leaned back with an arrogant smile and hooked his hands behind his head.
You're welcome, princess.
It's just Brooke.
All right, then. You have a nice day, princess.
Swallowing the verbal lashing that was clawing its way up her throat, she stood, smoothed the wrinkles from her jeans, then marched out the front door. One night here, and then she was gone. She'd rent a room in Saratoga and try to heal her broken muse there. Anything would be better than with a couple of burly,
foul-mouthed, irritating men. One night, then Ashland Mobile Park would be nothing but a blotch in her rearview mirror. Chapter 2 Trailer 1010 was in better shape on the inside than it looked like on the outside. It was old, and there was a giant dead spider on the counter, but someone had taken the time to put dark wood laminate flooring in, and had recently painted the walls and cabinets. The chemical smell still clung to the air. A green couch sat in front of a small entertainment center, and the kitchen wasn't disgusting, so there was that. It was actually cuter than she imagined a house like this could be. White cabinets, a deep sink, a purring refrigerator, and wainscoting around the tiny breakfast nook walls. And this place was downright passable as a viable living space. It even had a surprising amount of character. She kicked a small pile of leftover lumber out of the doorway of the bedroom attached to the kitchen and nodded her head slowly at the decent size of the bedroom. A small bathroom was just on the other side. Brown-colored shower, outdated light fixtures, and a horrid-looking faux marble sink with burn marks said the bathroom hadn't been updated like the rest of the house. But when she turned on the faucet, it worked, so it would be good enough for the night. She'd never seen a washer and dryer in a bathroom before, but she supposed trailer designers had to get creative with space in a tiny home like this. Back across the living room, a large second bedroom and bathroom took up nearly half the trailer, if she were staying, which she wasn't. This was where she would have set up her temporary art studio. First things first, she muttered, checking the window lock. The pane was old, and the seal had broken sometime in the trailer's long history, since a cool breeze brushed her skin and raised chill bumps on her arms. She made sure it was nice and secure. The rest of the windows were all the same. All drafty. She rubbed her arms to bring some warmth back into them and began to unfold the clean-smelling sheets and comforter someone had thoughtfully placed on the end of the queen-size mattress. At least the bed had a frame and stood off the ground in case any of those terrifying spiders were still lurking about. "They're back," Connor called out, scaring the devil out of Brooke. She looked around frantically. She could have sworn she locked the door behind her, but he sounded as if he were right beside her. Heart pounding, she moved the thin blue curtain to the side and watched Connor give a two-fingered wave to someone she couldn't see. Her mouth hung open. The walls must be thin as paper for her to hear him so easily. She eyeballed the width of the wall connected to the window, and it was less than 3 inches thick. Huh. She narrowed her eyes at the sagging ceiling and hooked her hands on her hips. Hopefully the place would stand for one more night until she was out of here. Movement caught her eye, and her attention jerked to a small brown mound that skittered across the floor and into the bathroom. A mouse! A scream, the pitch of which she'd never heard come from her vocal cords, shrieked from her. Instinctively, she bolted away from the critter, hands in the air as her legs pumped through the kitchen and living room. Chills ran up her spine as she imagined it chasing her. Gasping to scream again, she fumbled with the front door lock. A whimper turned into a high-pitched squawk just as she threw open the door. A man holding a yellow hard hat ran into her full force, and they fell back into the entryway. When she screamed again, the man closed his blazing blue eyes and hunched into himself as if the sound physically hurt him. "Woman, stop it! What's wrong?" The man looked around frantically, as if he was searching for the danger. Brooke felt something touch her hair. "It's in my hair! It's in my hair, isn't it?"
"What?"
He searched her hair from his position right on top of her. "The mouse!" He froze, then his body relaxed. One dark eyebrow cocked up as he propped himself up on his elbows.
"A mouse? Seriously? I thought you were dying."
He hovered over her, hips cradled between her legs, breathing hard like he just sprinted to her aid. His impossibly blue eyes searched her face, and something happened. Something instinctual. Something indiscernible sparked in the space between them. Mouse forgotten, and chest heaving, she raked her gaze over his locked arms and bulging triceps. His whole riddled gray t-shirt, and the thick cords of muscle that peaked from it. His Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed hard, as if he were feeling the same stunned flare she was. Straight nose, dark skin covered in dirt and dried sweat, animated eyebrows, and dark hair cropped short. He was beautiful. Masculine as hell, but beautiful was the word that came to mind. A crowd had apparently gathered outside because Bruiser's voice filled the entire house.
Looks like she's claimed, boys. Tegan's already having his way with her.
The Tegan he spoke of looked down at their connected hips with wide eyes and scrambled off her like she'd just set his dick on fire. He stood and slammed the door closed, cutting off the gawking view of what looked like 6 or 7 men. Glowering, he stood over her and refused to offer her a hand when she stumbled getting up.
"Who the hell are you?"
he asked, his voice low and gravelly. Sexy.
"Brooke Bell?"
Her name came out a squeak, which reminded her of the mouse. Jumping around him, she grabbed onto the back of his shirt with one hand and pointed to the bedroom with the other.
"There's a giant mouse in there. Or a rat. Or a ferret or a prairie dog. I don't know. It's huge."
Damn her voice as it shook.
"I don't give a shit about some mouse woman. What are you doing in my bunkhouse?"
"Your bunkhouse? No, no, no. There's been some mistake. I rented this place. Or rather, my mentor rented it."
Connor shoved his head through the door, face red like he was pissed.
"I saw her first." "Get out,"
Tegan bellowed. It was terrifying. Brooke covered her ears and cowered. Connor narrowed his eyes and slowly shut the door.
"Fantastic,"
Tegan growled out, swinging his gaze to her. He jammed an accusing finger at the door.
"And you caught the attention of that one? I want answers, and now. Who the hell are you?"
Brooke straightened her back and tipped her chin up primly.
"I'll talk when you take care of the mouse."
"Take care of the—"
With a snarl, he chucked his hard hat at the couch and stomped into the bedroom, leaving a mud trail behind him, the brute. She was a little surprised he didn't go through the squishy parts in the floor with his clunking work boots. Not 5 seconds later, he came out, holding the tail of the rodent, a small brown mouse, and definitely not the size of a prairie dog. He swung it toward her until she backed into the wall, then disappeared outside with it. Another 5 seconds, and he was back inside, arms crossed, head cocked, eyes blazing, and apparently waiting for her to speak.
"I'm Brooke Bell, like I said, and I was under the assumption that my mentor had rented a cottage retreat for me. And then I came here, and it was not as expected."
"You can't stay here."
"Yeah, I get that, but I'm not comfortable finding Saratoga in the dark either. Connor told me I could stay the night and leave in the morning."
Tegan dragged a troubled gaze toward the door.
"What else did Connor say to you?"
"That's none of your business."
"Yeah, it is. Connor is..."
He ran his hands roughly through his short hair.
"One night."
He turned and opened the door, then said over his shoulder,
"And I don't want you talking to Connor anymore. Is that clear?"
"Crystal."
"Great."
He slammed the door so hard, it rattled the trailer. Tegan gritted his teeth so hard, his jaw hurt. The woman had nearly drawn his bear from him. And for what? He didn't know her. Why the hell was his animal so desperate to rip out of his skin around a complete stranger? His hands shook, so he gripped his waist and gave a withering look to his crew. The entirety of the Ash crew, minus Jed, his alpha, was standing below the porch with somber expressions.
"Is she staying?" Kellen asked.
The man was almost as tall as Tegan, but where Tegan's eyes were bright blue, Kellen's were the rich color of coffee. The scar across his jaw said he fought like a warrior, but still, Kellen couldn't hold his gaze. Not when Tegan's bear was riled up like this.
"Of course she isn't staying. She's not a plaything. She's
human. She was a fucking human in a clan of monsters."
"We could take care of her,"
Kellen said low. Tegan drew up, shocked to his core.
"Take care of her? She isn't Snow White and we aren't the Seven Dwarves. She doesn't belong here. No woman does.
He sighed and looked at the flimsy front door of her trailer. She no doubt had terrible hearing like the rest of her kind, but the walls were thin, and she could probably make out every word he was saying.
Look, she's leaving first thing in the morning. I don't want any of you bothering her, okay?
He glared at Connor to make sure he agreed to his order. Tegan was second in the clan, and when Jed was away, his word was law. Connor nodded once and stared at the ground. Still, he trusted Connor about as far as he could throw him. Or rather, he didn't trust his bear. His inner animal had been on a relentless hunt for a mate lately, and Tegan would be damned if Connor was going to attach to some human who posed a threat to all of them. If he wanted a mate so badly, he needed to take a leave of absence from the crew and track down a she-bear who was willing, one who could better handle Connor's violent appetites in the bedroom, one who was stronger than some human woman afraid of a harmless mouse. A trill of dread snaked up Tegan's spine as Connor's attention shifted toward the trailer door again. The others dispersed, but Connor just stood there as if he couldn't help himself, and his eyes lightened more with each passing second.
Go on, Tegan said.
Connor drew his inhuman gaze to Tegan, then slowly slipped away. Tegan sighed and pinched the bridge of his nose to ward away the oncoming headache that rested just behind his eyes. That woman was in more trouble than she even knew. A mouse in her trailer was the very least of her worries until she hightailed it out of here tomorrow morning. Chapter 3 Zero freaking bars, and Brooke was stifling the urge to chuck her cell phone at the wall. Every text she'd sent to Meredith had failed, and now she couldn't make a call out. Her GPS still seemed to work, so what gave? With a growl, she snatched an oversized hoodie from her open suitcase on the bed and pulled it on. Before she could change her mind, she threw open the door and shoved the phone as far into the air as her arm would stretch. The smell of steak hit her nostrils and elicited an immediate rumble from her stomach. She hadn't eaten since lunch, and down the road, the Ashford Drive hermits seemed to be having a jovial bonfire. Still no bars. Huffing a sigh, she cast a baleful glare at the mountain men laughing and talking by the fire, shoved her phone in her hoodie pocket, and bounded down the stairs. She was on the side of a mountain, and surely, if she got high enough, she could get a signal. She clicked on the penlight that hung from her keychain and made her way behind the trailer to a rickety gate that screeched when she opened it.
"What are you doing?" Tegan asked.
She gasped. He stood leaning against the fence like he'd waited for days for her to try to make an escape. "Not that it's any of your business, but I'm going to search for a signal for my cell phone. I need to make a call."
"To whom?"
"My mentor," she said. "She made a mistake sending me here, and I need her help to figure out where else I can stay for the rest of my trip. Apparently, you don't get internet out here in the boonies either."
"You're hungry."
It wasn't a question, but a statement. Derailed from her irritation with Meredith, she asked, "What?"
"I can hear your stomach growling from here. Eat first, and then I'll show you the best place to get reception."
"I'm not following you out into the woods."
"Why not?"
"Because I don't trust you. I'm not stupid, Tegan. I've watched Deliverance." A surprise-sounding laugh huffed from his chest, and his face cracked into a grin. In the flickering glow of the fire, one side of his face was washed in orange light that contrasted with the white of his teeth.
"You must think mighty low of me, Ms. Bell. But I assure you, I'm no danger to you."
"You yelled at me earlier." She didn't mean to sound like she was pouting. It just came out that way. She was an artist, a sensitive soul, and he'd been a brute during their first meeting.
The smile faded from his face, and he leaned his lower back against the fence. He stared at the fire and the men talking around it. "If I hurt your feelings, I'm sorry. I'm not used to talking to women."
Brooke snorted.
"Obviously." He canted his head and studied her face. "Why are you really here?"
She offered him a sad smile.
Because I lost my way.
You mean you got lost on the way up here?
No, I mean I needed a break from my life. I was afraid I'd never be able to find the good parts of myself again if I didn't take a break from everything I knew. He stared at her for a long time, as if he was waiting for her to tell him her life story. No one had heard that tale, though, not even Meredith. What happened here? He brushed her long, blonde hair to the side and ran his finger along the bandage on her neck. He didn't quite touch her skin, but a shiver quaked up her spine and landed in her shoulders. Tegan frowned and pulled his hand away.
That is part of the reason I lost my way.
The words were forced and thick in her throat. She tried to swallow down the traitorous tears that would tell him how broken she really was.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I think I can wait until tomorrow to call Meredith.
Meredith. Tegan stood ramrod straight and squared his shoulders to hers. She backed up a step as his eyes seemed to turn darker, a trick of the firelight, no doubt, but still terrifying.
My mentor. She was the one who rented your bunkhouse to me.
He shook his head as if he didn't give two figs who her mentor was.
What do you do?
Pardon me?
For a living, what do you do for money? Her mouth dropped open at his audacity.
I'm a painter.
The smile he gave her failed to reach his eyes, and he nodded his head slowly. Of course you are. He scrubbed his hands over his face and sauntered off.
What? You are the rudest man I've ever met in my life, she followed, punching her sneakers into the earth. So let me get this straight. I'm not allowed to have first impressions about this place, but you can judge me on my occupation, which is actually a very lucrative career, I'll have you know.
She yanked his arm and spun him.
I was good once.
The last word echoed against the mountains, and the men at the fire grew quiet. The harsh look in Tegan's eyes softened. His slow grip on her shoulders halted her trembling. When had she started shaking? Whatever happened to you? Your mentor was wrong. It can't be fixed here. You can't be fixed here.
I know.
Her words came out ragged and defeated. Shame heated her cheeks, and she glanced at the men by the fire, all staring at her. A tall man with dark hair styled longer on top scooted down a log and patted it. You, girl, you'll sit here and eat with us. We'll feed you. The way he spoke was odd, but the kind look in his deep brown eyes had her slipping from Tegan's grasp and settling in beside the man.
Thank you.
I'm Kellen. He pointed to Connor and Bruiser and said, you know them. That's Hayden. A man with a shaved head and tattoo on his neck grunted and nodded, and Kellen went to the next around the fire. That's Drew. Drew couldn't seem to meet her eyes, but he attempted to smile before he took another bite of beans. Those two over there, Brighton and Dennison, Kellen said, were born of the same sow.
What does that mean? She asked.
He's my brother, Dennison explained. He looked around the fire and gave a private smile at his plate. I mean, he's my blood brother. 2 minutes older than me. He don't talk, though. Never has.
Brighton studied her frankly, then nodded and grinned. Is this everyone who lives in this trailer park? She asked, curiosity lining up a string of questions in her mind.
All but one, Connor said. Jedediah's up in Saratoga fucking his mate.
The men went silent and still, and a soft rumble came from one of them. It was an eerie sound that lifted the hairs on the back of her neck.
What do you mean by mate? Brooke asked softly, suddenly feeling exposed among these strangers.
He doesn't mean anything, Tegan said in a steely voice. He handed her a plate he'd apparently made during introductions and sat on the other side of her. So close, she could feel his warmth through the thick material of her hoodie.
The plate in her hands was metal and growing hot under the piping steak, baked potato, and beans. Gently, she set it on her lap and made sure everyone else was eating before she dug in.
What do you paint? Kellen asked between bites.
Brooke twisted on her rough seat and tried to judge the distance from where she and Tegan had been talking about her occupation. It should have been too far for him to hear. But apparently he had supersonic dog hearing or something.
I paint mostly fantasy landscapes.
The ones that were best received were in a series called The Stars Align.
And what do they look like?
They were set at night, but the forest below the starry sky was done in bright colors, like the northern lights. I paint with extra on my brush and build up the canvas until the surface has texture. Here. She pulled her phone from her pocket. The signal was still gone, but she could pull up pictures. She scrolled through a few she'd taken of the woods on the way up here for inspiration and handed the phone to Kellen. Tegan was trying not to look as Kellen showed it around, she could tell, but his eyes landed on the phone the second Kellen angled it in his direction.
I can draw horses, Hayden said. If you ever need to paint one, I can start it for you.
Her face cracked in a smile, and she dipped her chin. The stretch of her face felt good. You have dimples, Tegan said, so low she almost missed his words.
Self-conscious, she nodded and sawed another piece off her steak.
The food tasted amazing. Maybe it was because she was starving, but she was impressed with how good a group of bachelors could cook.
What do you all do?
For work? Dennison asked.
Yeah.
Drew thumped his chest.
We're lumberjacks, men of the axe, woodcutters, the Paul Bunyans of the...
She gets it, Drew, Dennison said, tossing a bean at him. Brooke giggled at their easy rapport. I've never met lumberjacks before. Honestly, I didn't realize they existed anymore around here. The hint of a smile clung to the corners of Tegan's mouth as he said,
There weren't until a few months ago. The sawmill in Saratoga has been shut down for a decade, but the beetle infestation has them up and running again.
The mention of beetles made her want to lift her shoes off the ground. Are there a lot of beetles still around here?
Oh, yeah, they're nearly impossible to kill off, Hayden said. I can draw beetles, too.
Shut up, man, Drew said, shoving his shoulder. The beetles have killed off a lot of this forest and left hundreds of thousands of dead trees, Tegan said. They've dried and created the perfect tinder for wildfires. The mill in Saratoga is equipped to treat the beetle-eaten wood, but they needed a few crews to come in and help clear the land. New growth has been slow, because the woods were so thick. Sunlight couldn't get to the pine cones beneath the thick branches. Once we come through and take out the dead trees, the forest will come back. Plus, we're replanting as we go along. Takes a lot of time, but it'll be worth it to see this place green again.
So, you aren't the only crew on this mountain?
On this mountain, yes, Kellen said. We are the ash crew. The graybacks are over a ridge, but still close enough to be a pain in our asses. The Borlanders do the cutting for both crews. The man who hired us owns this land. Hundreds of thousands of acres need to be cleared, and each log is money in our pockets. The more timber we clear, the closer the crews get to each other.
So you have lumberjack battles?
She held back a laugh, imagining plaid-shirted, burly men yelling about territory disputes.
Princess, you wouldn't want to be within a mile of one when it goes down, Connor said ominously.
She hated the way he called her that. She narrowed her eyes at him, then bent to the task of eating the rest of her meal before it cooled. The rumbling noise sounded again, and when she looked up at Tegan, he was glaring at Connor. Stifling a gasp, she reached out before she could change her mind and pressed the palm of her hand against his rattling chest. A second of deep vibration shook her hand before he grabbed her palm. The noise stopped, and Tegan looked at her with wide eyes. Confusion swam in the depths there, and he dropped his gaze to her palm. For an instant, she thought he would kiss it.
What are you doing to me? He asked, his tone soft but accusing.
I said I saw her first, Connor gritted out, dropping his plate beside his feet and standing. I won't fucking say it again.
Tegan stood so fast, he blurred. All right, dinner's through, Kaelin said, dragging her backward off the log.
When had the behemoth even stood up?
I challenge you for her, Connor snarled, circling the fire. And I challenge you for second.
Shit, Kellen muttered, hustling her away faster.
Wait, what are they doing? She tried to escape his grasp, but damn, Kellen was surprisingly strong.
Nothing you need to worry about, and nothing that's going to happen tonight anyway. Challenges can't be done without Jed here.
He could have been talking in French,
She didn't understand any of this. Wait, my plate. I forgot to leave my plate.
I'll take it back.
Kellen had already managed to drag her past three trailers, and she was having trouble seeing Tegan and Connor in the middle of the men who seemed to be trying to pull them apart. She didn't belong to anyone, and some archaic fight, sure as sugar, wasn't going to ensure that she picked either one of them. I don't understand. Kellen spun her shoulders and leveled her a look.
I want you to stay. I like you, and we never have soft things around here. I want us to take care of you and fix your paintings. But you don't want Connor. You don't. And Tegan isn't ready for a maid. Best you leave at first light in the morning.
Okay, she said, her voice wrenching up an octave. Kellen was telling her something important. The desperate look in his eye said so, but his words were jumbled.
Mate? I'll leave.
She'd been planning on it anyway. Kellen's oversized hands slipped from her shoulders, and he looked back at her once as he walked back toward the men by the fire. Whatever relaxed moment she'd found by the fire with those strangers, there was something much deeper going on here, something she couldn't fathom, nor would she ever. These men were different from anyone she'd ever met. It took a certain kind of person to live out in the middle of nowhere, away from civilization, and it had apparently taken its toll on all of them. Kellen, Tegan, and her own instincts had all warned her off Connor, and now he was going to try and hurt Tegan for some notion of dibs on her. Brooke's stomach lurched, and for a second, she thought she'd be sick right at the corner of 1010. She was nobody's dibs, and Kellen didn't need to worry. As soon as dawn streaked the sky, she'd be speeding off in her Volvo. Nothing and no one could make her stay.
Chapter 4
Heart pounding, trying to get away. A scream trapped in her throat. Brooke slammed against the wall as the stranger's palm connected with her cheek again. Whimpering. Was that from her? Scared.
You stupid bitch. All you had to do was give me your purse.
Fetid breath. Soulless voice. Couldn't move. Crying. Tears burning tracks down her face. She was going to die in this stairwell. I tried. She whispered, desperate to explain. Purse wound around her arm, couldn't hand it over fast enough. Now she'd die for clumsiness. Please don't kill me. Laughter, empty and cruel, echoing down the empty stairs. Rotted teeth showed in an empty smile, a flash of light reflecting off silver. The blade.
Not gonna kill you, darling. Gonna mark you, so you always remember the day you fucked with me.
Pain, pain, pain. No! Brooke shot up in bed and fell over the edge. She couldn't breathe, and the mark on her neck burned like hellfire. Where was she? It was dark. Too dark. Blue eyes, reflecting like an animal's in the dim light of the moon. Terror seized her throat, making it impossible to scream.
Shh,
Tegan said, falling to his knees beside her. Don't touch me, she sobbed, trying to fling his grip off her upper arms. He didn't let go. Instead, he drew her into his lap and held her tight. Don't touch me, she said again with less feeling.
It's okay. I'm here. No one is going to hurt you.
A low wail left her lips as she clutched onto his t-shirt in the dark. Her tears were dampening the fabric, but she didn't care. For the first time since she'd been attacked, the touch of a man didn't frighten her. She didn't even flinch when he lifted his hand to stroke her hair away from her face. She squeezed her eyes tightly closed and allowed him to rock her gently until her heart felt like it was back in her chest. He smelled like soap and piney woods with an undercurrent of something rich and masculine. She didn't deserve his comfort. She didn't deserve anyone's comfort. Stupid fucking nightmare. Every time it was the same. Every time she had to relive the night, stripped everything from her. When she opened her eyes again, they had adjusted to the minimal blue moonlight filtering in through the broken windows. Kellen crouched near her ankles, staring at her like he'd never seen a woman cry before. Dennison and the rest of the crew, Abba Connor, stood just inside the doorway, looking haunted. "We thought someone was hurting you," Tegan said, his voice a soft stroke against her ear. How did she explain that someone was hurting her? All the time.
"She's okay," he told his crew. "Going back to bed. I'll watch her until she falls asleep."
Kellen squeezed her ankle under her flannel pajama bottom pants and gave a sad smile. It should have felt too intimate coming from a stranger. But instead, a comforting warmth spread up her leg. Dennison stepped forward and brushed his fingertips over her head, and the same warm tendrils flooded her, making her feel dizzy, like she'd taken a cheap shot of whiskey. The other men did the same, one by one. "Why did they do that?" she asked, when they had gone. Tegan slid his arm under the crease behind her knees and lifted her onto the bed.
"Because touch is important to us. You were hurt. None of them would have been able to sleep tonight if they didn't reassure themselves you were okay."
It felt...
A slight frown took Tegan's face. It felt like what?
Comforting. His eyebrows shot up as if she'd caught him by surprise. Seconds ticked by as he studied her face. For what, she didn't know.
"I'm going to get you a drink of water. And then we should talk about what happened to you."
Brooke lifted her chin and shook her head. "I don't want to do that."
"But you will. Or that nightmare will follow you to the grave. Wait here."
Panicked at the idea of sharing that night with anyone, she clutched the comforter and eyed the window. She could just leave. She could leave here and keep the hurt inside, where it belonged. Tegan returned, disrupting any thoughts of escape. He handed her a glass of water and turned to flip the switch on an old-fashioned sconce on the wall. The soft glow of a light bulb bathed the room, and Brooke drew the covers over her lap like armor. No doubt her hair was a rumpled mess, and she was wearing the least attractive pajama set she'd ever laid eyes upon. It was the reason she'd bought it, so she could be invisible. But here, in front of Tegan, with him studying her with that unsettling calmness about him, she wished she'd brought something cuter. He wore a thin gray cotton t-shirt, still rumpled and tear-stained from her earlier meltdown. Black sweats were slung low across his tapered waist, and his feet were bare as he drew one under him. As she cradled the glass of cold water, he reached over and tugged at the bandage on her neck, the one she never removed, unless she was switching it out for a new one. She allowed it. God, she was actually going to let someone see the ugliest part of her. And not just someone, but Tegan, who felt important. She scrunched her face as the adhesive pulled at her skin.
Brooke, why do you have a bandage over an injury that is healed?
Because it doesn't feel healed.
It still hurts.
No. Tegan folded the bandage carefully and dropped his gaze. His motions were slow, calculated.
What happened?
Tegan thought she was weak. She saw it when he'd helped rid her trailer of the mouse, and she could see it now. But she wanted to be stronger. She wanted his respect. Tilting her chin up and straightening her spine, she said, I was mugged. He was caught. He went to jail for 3 months, and now he's free. I left Boulder because I wanted to get better. He huffed air from his lungs and dragged his gaze to hers. His eyes were such a strange color, blue and green and brown all at once, churning as if something she'd said had angered him.
That's a nice, shortened version there, but that won't help you deal with this, and it won't help me understand.
He patted the bed and settled a pillow, then lay beside it, hands hooked behind his head.
I've got all night.
With a long, steadying sigh, she lay beside him on the pillow he'd fluffed for her and stared at the sagging ceiling. I was a painter. I had shows and galleries and made a living off my art. People wanted to be near me and speak with me about how I created and why. I had everything. Friends, a supportive family, a mentor who was with me every step of the way. My apartment wasn't the nicest, but it was home, and soon I was going to have enough money saved up to buy a condo I'd been eyeing. My life was perfect.
Nobody's life is perfect.
Mine was. She saw it now, that perfect life dancing just out of her reach. Days filled with outings to appease her creative side, and nights spent in her studio, working out everything she wanted to say with oils or acrylics. When she became too comfortable with one, she switched. Stacks of blank canvases, waiting for her to put a story on them, waiting to be hung in the galleries who were happy to provide space and good lighting for her when she had enough to sell. Champagne and pictures for local newspapers, and Meredith always there when her nerves got the best of her. I like to take the stairs instead of the elevator. Elevators have always scared me. Probably because when I was younger, my mom and I got stuck on one for a few hours. I was a creature of habit, always leaving around the same time to go to the gym or to go pick up food. A man stopped me and asked me for a light in one of the wells one night, but I didn't think anything of it. I told him I didn't smoke and went on my way. The next day, he was there again, but instead of a light, he wanted my purse this time. Thickness clogged her throat as she thought about how mad the man had been when she'd fumbled. I tried to hand my purse to him, but it was a small one with a wrist strap, and when it didn't slide off, I yanked to try and loosen it, only it came out of the man's hand instead. He hit me. She pitched her voice to nothing but a whisper. I thought he would kill me, but he only laughed when I pleaded with him not to. He gave me the mark because he wanted me to remember what he'd done and how helpless I really am. He made the mark with a pocket knife. I don't wear the bandage because it hurts, Tegan. I wear it so I don't see how pathetic I am in the mirror every day.
What's his name?
Doesn't matter.
Does to me.
His voice sounded grittier than she'd heard before, and when he spoke, the air in the room felt heavy, harder to breathe. She wanted to give him what he demanded, really, but thinking about saying that monster's name out loud felt like conjuring the devil himself. I can't.
His body went rigid beside her. You aren't pathetic, Brooke. And you aren't weak.
You thought I was. I could tell when you saw me scream at that mouse.
I was wrong. You're maybe the bravest woman I've ever met.
Those words, oh, what they did to her heart. A layer of loneliness slipped from her, making her feel raw and exposed, but hopeful, too.
What happened to your paintings?
He rested his arm by her side and squeezed her hand gently with his. Flutters filled her stomach as he left his warm hand on top of hers. The calluses on his palm rubbed against the smoothness of her hand. They really were from two different worlds. But everything in her sang that Tegan knew heartache, too. He was a kindred spirit who would understand. If only she could be brave enough to explain. I can't paint anymore. Every time I try, it comes out dark, different, unsellable. The bright parts of me that created before were snuffed out. I guess I came out here because I thought I could connect to the outdoors and find my muse again.
You do starscapes. It wasn't a question, but a statement.
Yes.
Put your jacket on.
He sat up and scrubbed both hands down his face. His hair was still mussed from sleep, but when he looked back at her, his expression wasn't tired. It was kind. Her fingers twitched for the warmth he'd taken with him when he'd let go of her hand, but in this moment, she knew exactly what Tegan was. He was a friend. He was a decent person. And he was a good man. And as scary as it was to trust someone with her darkest secrets, he wasn't running. This perfect stranger was offering her sanctuary she hadn't known existed. 5 minutes later, teeth brushed, jeans and sweater on, jacket folded over her arm, Brooke waited on her porch for Tegan. She hadn't known which trailer he lived in, but one across the road and two down had the light on. When Tegan ducked under the front door and smiled at her, all doubt was erased. A strange zing of excitement traveled up her spine that he lived so close. With a silent twitch of his chin, he gestured her to follow. She jogged to catch him, pulling on her jacket as she ran. It was still winter, but on the cusp of spring. And even though the days were warm, the nights had a chill that bit right through those trailer walls. She'd been sleeping with the window unit heater blasting and still hadn't managed to keep the goose flesh off her calves. The light from the park disappeared as Tegan opened a gate for her and waited for her to pass. "It's so dark," she whispered, afraid to wake the others. If she could hear every word through the walls of a rental, surely they could too.
"I figured you'd have trouble seeing," Tegan said, handing her a cold black cylinder. "Here."
Brooke clicked on the flashlight and pointed it toward the ground. "And you don't have trouble seeing in the dark?"
A simple no sounded over his broad shoulder before he marched off at a grueling pace.
The trail wound this way and that like some giant serpent through the trees. The smell of pine was fragrant, and the sound of forest birds soft in the distance. Gentle wind rocked the branches in the evergreen canopy over their heads, and the pine needles made swishing sounds as she walked across them.
"Where are you taking me?"
she asked, desperate to fill the silence. The dark had frightened her as a child, and out here in the middle of nowhere, those fears crept back.
"You'll see."
She halted. "I don't know about this. I think we should go back. It's the middle of the night."
"You scared?" he asked.
It wasn't a taunt. She could tell when he turned around. In the illumination of the flashlight, his expression only held concern. Embarrassed, and afraid her voice would shake, she nodded her head.
"Of me?"
"No," she frowned. By all accounts, she had every right to be afraid of him. She'd only met him yesterday, and was in the woods with him, in complete darkness, and no one knew where she was. But for whatever reason, instinctual perhaps, Tegan didn't feel like a threat to her. Instead, he made her feel safe. He approached slowly, arms extended, but didn't touch her, as if he were trying to calm a frightened animal.
"It's 5 minutes more hiking, and we'll be there. You shared something big with me tonight, and I know that was hard. I'm sharing something of mine, too."
A slow smile stretched her face. "Something special?" His Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed hard.
"Yes."
Something flashed, and she jerked the beam of light toward it.
"What was that?"
Tegan's warm palm pushed her hand down, and softly, he pressed her thumb against the button that turned the flashlight off.
"Look," he said,
so close, his chest pressed against her shoulder blades, and his breath tickled her ear. A tiny glow shone, then disappeared. Another followed, farther away and to the left. Then another, and another.
"They're fireflies," Tegan explained in a hushed tone. "They stay active late into the night up here."
She'd seen fireflies before, but not like this. As more and more lit up, she gasped. "They're beautiful." Tegan looked down at her, holding her gaze in the soft moonlight.
"Yeah, beautiful."
Her heart beat against her chest as his eyes dipped to her lips. Her breath froze in her chest as he leaned closer.
"You want me to kiss you, don't you?" he asked low.
The fireflies illuminated the woods behind him with their twinkling lights. Her lips throbbed with wanting, and her chest stirred, like she was just coming back to life after a long slumber. If he kissed her, she'd be changed from the inside out, from her cells to her muscle fibers, to her pounding heart. Everything would be different. She wanted that. She wanted to live again. Searching his eyes, she nodded.
"Yes."
His chin tilted slightly, and he gave her a hard look.
"You're too good for this place. You shouldn't be wanting things like that."
He pulled away and turned his back on her. Not before she saw something dark in his eyes. Hurt. Or perhaps regret. She wasn't sure. Angry and feeling tricked, she clenched her hands at her sides and glared at his receding back. "I shouldn't want things like that? To kiss a man? I didn't ask you to get that close to me. You leaned in, and now you're shaming me for feeling?"
"No, Brooke," he said, turning. "You should absolutely want to kiss a man. Try saving your affection for someone who returns it next time."
Her mouth dropped open. How utterly confusing. She'd completely misread that moment with the fireflies, and now she'd angered him. Admittedly, she didn't have that much experience with the opposite sex. Still, his abruptness stung. I'm sorry, I... She didn't know what she was supposed to apologize for. Clearly, she'd done something wrong, but she hadn't a clue as to what. He hiked up the trail, much faster than she could keep up with, and when he was nearly out of sight in her flashlight beam, he stopped and pointed to a clearing on the side of the mountain. Here. This is where you'll get the best cell phone reception. Confusion engulfed her as she paused beside him. Thank you, she murmured softly, trying to keep the tremble from her voice. Can you see the trail we came up? She pointed the flashlight down the steep embankment along a thin, worn path.
Yes.
Good. That'll lead you right back to the park.
Where are you going?
Home. But he didn't go back down the trail. Instead, he disappeared into the woods.
What did I do wrong? She blurted out.
Tegan didn't answer. Hell, from the way he'd torn out of there, he was probably too far away to hear her. A stupid, treacherous tear slipped down her cheek, and she dashed it away angrily. She'd trusted Meredith to rent a decent place for her. This trip hadn't been her idea. It had been her mentor's. Let me take care of everything, she'd said. Yeah, well, look where that got her. Then she'd been stupid enough to trust Tegan, a complete stranger, and a man so hot and cold she couldn't read his mood from one moment to the next. And now he'd abandoned her out here in the woods in the middle of the freaking night. She was pretty sick and tired of trusting others, only to be left on her ass. Another tear came, and another, and just in case that jerk Tegan was watching her from the woods somewhere, she turned her back to the forest and looked out over the valley between this mountain and the next. Oh my gosh, she whispered as her gaze landed on the starry night below her. A million specks of light pierced the dark veil above her. The mountains were only dark shadows, tinged in the blue moonlight, but the stars were resplendent. Brooke sagged to her knees at the grandeur of it all. No city lights tainted the sky here. There was just wilderness as far as the eye could see, and millions upon millions of stars. Her soul opened like the blossom of a spring flower as she relaxed under the dark blanket of the sky. She let the breeze have her neck as she stretched her head back to see everything above her. One last tear streamed down her face, but this one wasn't from anger or confusion. It was from reverence. Leaning backward until she lay on the ground, she spread her hands and ankles out and inhaled deeply. Tegan had said this place was where the best reception was, but that wasn't why he'd brought her up here. He'd brought her here to loosen her muse, because on some level, he'd known what she needed. And it was this, right here. Moments of silence with the thing she'd adored painting for so long. I think you should stay, Tegan said from right behind her. She should have been startled, but oddly enough, she was getting used to the silent way he and his crew moved. I thought you hated me. I don't hate you, Brooke, he said, lowering himself until he lay beside her. I just can't get involved with you like that. I don't do one-night stands.
Me either. I'm sorry I pushed you too far. I just haven't been around a man like you. I got lost in the moment.
She shook her head self-consciously and thanked the heavens above that Tegan couldn't see the heat burning across her cheeks. I was going to leave, but I saw you. You dropped to your knees when you saw the stars. You cried. Embarrassment flooded her face with fire until the tips of her ears burned. That had been a private moment, not meant for his eyes. I thought you'd left. I know what you're thinking. You think I'll see you as weak for crying, but I don't. I already told you that. You dropped to your knees, and that's what I did when I saw this place 3 months ago. It touched you. I don't know how to fix what's been broken with your paintings, but I have a feeling this place is a start. I don't want you to go in the morning. I think you owe it to yourself to see this thing through. He turned his face until his eyes met hers. I think you're meant to be here. She dabbed moisture from the corner of her eye with her coat sleeve and dragged her gaze back up to the glittering sky above them.
Maybe you're right. I do feel different here. I've been in a rut for so long. It's nice to feel something new.
So you'll stay.
Stay in that tiny trailer? In a park full of sweaty lumberjacks? She hadn't considered it before.